Good morning. I'm Mitch LaPlante from University of California, San Francisco, and my presentation is really a psychometric analysis of a measure of disability across the lifespan, as opposed to the other presentations, which are really more about the aging with a disability. But it is sort of related, we know that, there's been several studies that have shown ADL and IADL items scale within older populations, and several studies that have contested that, actually. But from a policy point of view, we have to make decisions about long-term services and supports for adults of all ages. And I'm from the Center on Personal Assistance Services, so the question in my mind was, when we have policy such as the CLASS Act that is included in healthcare reform, but is now on the shelf, because it was determined that it wouldn't make sense from a financing point of view. But that, like many other policies, requires someone to have a need for help in two or more activities of daily living for all adults of all ages in order to trigger a benefit. And, concern is, how valid is that assumption? How well do these measures work for non-elderly populations as well as elderly populations? So I'm concerned that whether they scale comparably enough across different age groups that we can be relatively assured they're measuring the same thing. Essentially started a secondary analysis of some national surveys to investigate that. And, there's some theory behind the scaling and scalability of the activities of daily living. So CATS, as I'm sure many of you know, is famous for developing the basic activities of daily living scale, which includes bathing, dressing, transferring, toileting, and eating. And CATS actually had a developmental model that's somewhat appealing, sort of elegant. He found that, or he argued that people have difficulty with these activities in the reverse pattern of the way that they're acquired from childhood. So, as a child, first you eat, and then you toilet, and dress and bathe in those orders. And as you get older, you lose these activities in the reverse order, which creates a hierarchical pattern among these items that is fairly reproducible across different studies and populations. And CATS, actually, many people say CATS, the ADLs were really developed out of an institutional sort of population, but CATS actually included non-elderly adults with chronic illness in some of his analyses. The instrumental activities of daily living include things such as shopping for groceries, getting around town, preparing meals, communicating, like using the telephone, cognitive things like managing your money and finances, and managing your medications. And it comes from the Lawton's, essentially, environmental, ecological work that Dr. Hutchings mentioned. And Lawton and Brody argued that especially when you're looking at populations of people in the community, that the activities of daily living weren't sufficient. You need to be able to pay your bills to maintain your residence in the community. You need to be able to bring food in and prepare it and eat it. These are essential things that one really needs to be able to do to live independently in the community, that is, on your own, either with or assistance from another person or technology, but independently from an institution. So for this presentation, I'm sort of building on some analysis that I've published earlier, which is a paper in the Journal of Gerontology, Social Sciences, and I'm going to be talking about some of those results and then expanding that with some results from another survey. Another paper that actually motivated my analysis, which is a paper by some colleagues, John Fleischman and William Spector and Barbara Altman, which also looked at the way that these items scale by age and by gender in one of the national surveys, the National Health Interview Survey on Disability. And they found that psychometrically that there was some differences by age and gender that they decided were actually indicative that the items were biased across these groups. And they used you have a choice of methods in order to do this kind of work. I don't know how many people do any kind of scaling work in the audience, but essentially you have factor analytic techniques and you have item response theory techniques. And so they used a factor analytic mimic method and looked at the Health Interview Survey on Disability Phase 1 with the five basic ADL items and seven IADL items. And I don't really understand factor analysis techniques very well, so I guess because I'm sort of trained more as an epidemiologist or I like epidemiology, I sort of favor item response theory, which I think generally the larger world does anyway. And so I decided that I could do a similar analysis looking at the five ADLs and several IADL items in the NHISD. There were two phases to this survey. This was a survey on disability, a large national sample. And the first phase was to identify people with disabilities. The second phase was to do some more intensive surveying of the people with disabilities so identified. And one came out later than the other, so I suppose they were using phase one because it was available at the time that they were doing their study. Mine comes later, so I used phase two because it had more items to analyze. So they found that the items were biased by age and gender, but they did say that using their techniques you could adjust for that bias, but that sort of adds a practical complication. You know, we could no longer look at just 2+ ADLs, we'd have to weight them first and then take some other kind of metric to utilize them. So my approach, being that I'm really interested in whether these things work for non-elderly people, was to focus strictly on age and use IRT to look at how the items work. So for my purposes, I needed a large set of items. I needed a data set that included the full age spectrum of adults. So as I said, I chose phase two because it had a couple more IADL items than phase one. So I had 14 that I utilized in that study. And in order to look at how reproducible those results were, I chose another survey, the Survey of Income and Program Participation, another large national household survey. That has a few, that has 12 items that are similar to the HISD. These items are all basically from the older, the ORS instrument from Duke and adapted in different surveys or changed in certain ways, but they're essentially similar questions. And in the SIP, it has a couple items that are missing, including needing help to get to places out in the community and needing help to utilize the telephone. The samples in these are all pretty large. The HISD is based on interviews with 25,000 adults. And those with one or more IADLs or ADLs is about 7,600 people, and the SIP was about 4,000 people. So there's really no problem with using these items and doing this analysis by age. And I broke the age groups up into basically decile groups from 18 years of age and older. So with the IRT model, basically a person's score measures the person's location on the continuum of disability. And if items are hierarchical, each measures a point on the continuum from low to high levels of disability. So needing help getting places is a less severe indicator of disability than needing help eating is. And so basically IRT then assumes that the probability of response to each item should follow an S-shaped pattern, which is called an item characteristic curve, so that it's likely that a person with a low disability will respond to low disability items and not to high disability items. It's very much just like educational testing. So just to give you a sense of what's going on here, I thought I'd just show you a sample data table. You organize the items one by one from low to high of whatever it is you're measuring. You organize the responses by score from 0 to 6 in this case with 6 items. And what you'll note is that as you go across, for the low severity items, there's a high probability people will respond to the low, the items that are measuring the low level of the quantity. And as you go up to those that have a high level of the quantity being measured, there's a high likelihood they will respond to the lower level items and the higher level items. And if you look down the table this way, you can see that there the probability of response according to the score increases very rapidly for the low items and increases in a also in a high level for the high quantity items, but only for people who have higher scores. So that's basically all we're doing, and you can see that you could fit a bunch of S-shaped curves to that data. I'm sorry, this is blurry. It looks like everything when I take my glasses off.
Disability simulation.
Yes, yes. So this just shows two items, getting outside, needing help getting outside the home, and needing help managing money. Needing help getting outside is a lower level of disability than needing help managing money. So on the scale, which is sort of a transformation of the scores, then you can see that if you had a whole set of items, they just sort of, the S curves would just line up one by one. And then the dots are the actual proportions that I took out of a similar data table as I've shown you, and then the curves are fit to those. So that's how IRT works. There's nothing that really that magical, and anyone who's done LOGIT analysis, I think, can see that. So, thank you. The central ideas here, that is, with differential item functioning, the slopes will change by different age groups. They can be higher or they can be lower. But that can happen, and it will happen. You can have a lot of that kind of variability with large samples. That'll be very significant in large samples. But really, to have a good measure that's unbiased by age, the measure itself is based on the summation of the expectations from the fitted curves. So they can either be positive or negative, and they can balance out in a measure. So you can have diff by age, as Fleischman and colleagues found, but you really have to look at how that works for the entire measure, and that's done by looking at the test characteristic curve. So I'm going to quickly run through these results here because I only have a little bit more time left. What I observed is that the ADL items do actually form a Gutman scale, and that means that they're basically a perfect hierarchy. Well, it's not quite perfect. At ages 85 and above, the coefficient of scalability is 0.9. That's pretty close to perfect. You don't see these kind of things in a lot of educational testing items. But it increases with age. And what happens is when you do the IRT analysis and you look at the test characteristic curves, you'll see that there's quite a difference between young people, 18 to 34, and people who are 85 and older. And this is with the only with the ADL items. Now, with the IADL items, it increases with age as well, but they're not as highly hierarchical as the ADL items are. And actually, when these are combined in one scale, you get a very good test characteristic curve, even for young people compared to very old people. So what I found then is that in order to avoid the age bias, you merely have to combine the ADLs and IADLs together into one scale. And what I wanted to do as well is see, is this reproducible in other surveys? And so I chose SIP. I found again that the items in terms of Gutman coefficients increase with age, and the ADL patterns are similar in that IRT test characteristics do show bias for the ADL items, but I wasn't able to quite reproduce the more elegant results from the HISD, with the SIP, and that might be because the SIP actually didn't include as many items. The cognitive ones about managing money and medications didn't fit the scale, which may have to do with how they were asked. And also they left out the one about needing help using the telephone. So the SIP doesn't quite measure the cognitive items very well. So in conclusion, the HISD is the only example so far that shows that you can use these items to measure ADL and IADL disability across all age groups. And that actually has a lot more content validity, as Lawton and Brody suggested almost 40 years ago. With the SIP, I wasn't able to replicate the combined scale without having some significant age bias left in that. Questions?
Thank you very much.